On Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph, Tana Rabbanan, it's the first of the wide lines. But first we'll go back to the Mishnah for a second. Back on Nun Aleph Amud Beis, the Mishnah at the beginning of the eighth parak. So the Mishnah records Machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, which is approximately three lines down from the top of the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim Notlim Liyadayim V'yachach Mozgim Esakos. So they had a minig of drinking wine at the beginning of the meal, before the meal. And the question is, when do you do Netilas Yadayim? This reminds us a little bit of the Yeki Minog about Kiddush. You know, they wash before Kiddush. So that's sort of like Beit Shammai over here. Beit Shammai says that first you wash your hands, and then you pour the cup of wine, you drink the cup of wine, and that's it. You don't have to wash the second time. You washed once, that's enough. Beis Hillel Omrim Mozgim Esakos V'achakach Notlim Liyadayim. That first you pour the cup, and then afterwards, you wash your hands. In other words, according to Beis Hillel, what we're familiar with is that you wash your hands for the Netilas Yadayim right before you eat the pas. So let's take a look now at the Gemara Torah Rabbanon, and hopefully the Gemara is going to explain this machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Why Beit Shammai have you wash your hands before you pour the cup of wine, and Beis Hillel have you wash your hands after you finish with your wine? And the Gemara starts now, Tana Rabbana, with an explanation of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai Omrim Notlim Liyadayim V'achakach Mozgim Esakos. Why is it necessary to wash your hands before you pour the wine? She'imata omer mozgim esakos tchila. If he's going to pour the wine first and only afterwards wash his hands, gzera shemiyitamu hamashkim Mashkim Shachore Hakos Machmas Yodov V'yachzeru V'yitamu Es Hakos. So Beit Shammai assume that there's something called Mashkim Shachore Hakos. Now the word Achore, which we translate as behind, but here it means on the outside. So there are some liquids on the outside of the kos. In other words, according to Beit Shammai, the first assumption is that when you pour a cup of wine, some of the liquid will spill over onto the outside of the cup. And that's mashkim. So you have mashkim, which are on the outside of the cup. Now, his hands will come in direct contact with those mashkim, and he hasn't washed his hands, right? So, Beit Shammai is telling you why he needs to wash his hands. If he doesn't wash his hands, then he's going to be metame the mashkim me'achore akos through his yadayim, because his yadayim now have contact with the mashkim on the outside of the kos. And then yachzeru v'yitamu esakos. And the mashkim, which are out on the outside of the kos, now became tamei. And they will in turn be metamei the kos. So there are a whole bunch of assumptions here that I understand in Beit Shammai. But first of all, as we said before, he's assuming that the cup itself is wet on the outside. It's a wet kos. And again, as I said before, presumably some of the liquids from the inside spill out to the outside. So, okay, that's his first assumption. That's fine. Now, his second assumption is that the Yadayim themselves, if he doesn't wash, are Tmeos. So we have to understand that as well. And thirdly, when the Yadayim come in contact with this liquid, with the wine that's on the outside of the cup, they will be metame, again, if he didn't wash his hands, they will be metame, the liquid on the outside of the cuss. And then finally, his assumption is once the metame, the liquid's on the outside of the cuss, that's going to be metame, the cuss. Now, all this would only make sense if Beit Shammai is holding that it's not a good idea to have a cuss that's tame, that became tummy on the outside during your meal. So we have to guarantee that the cuss itself is tar for the meal. And it's not acceptable that the cuss is tummy. And we have to understand why that's so. But be that as it may, what's going on here, according to Beit Shammai, here's the series, here's the Chagadya. Your hands, which are tmeos, if you didn't wash, are going to be metame the mashke that's outside of the kos, and the mashke outside of the kos is going to be metame the kos. And that's something that Beit Shammai has to avoid. We cannot use, during the course of our seuda, a kos tmeo. How do we avoid the kos becoming a kos tmeo? We wash our hands, and by washing our hands, we remove the tumah from our hands, such that even if our hands now come in contact with the liquid that's on the outside of the kos, we will not be metame that liquid, because our hands are tahoros. Now, let's try to give a little bit of background over here. I have an introduction here in the notes of the Masifta, and he says the following, that Beit Shammai is worried about the kos becoming tameh. Now, normally the kos on a Doraisa level could only become tameh from contact with an avatuma. Let's take the paradigm case of a mess, a dead body, right? A dead body is metame adam v'kelim. Maybe even without maga, maybe through oil, but certainly through maga, if a kli comes in contact with the body of a mess, or a sheretz, which is an avatuma, a human body is even more tummy than a sheretz. He's an avi avosatum. But anyway, so that's metame adam v'kelim. Now the Rabbanon are going to introduce a new possibility, and that is that although the keli that came in contact with the av hatuma on a deraisa level, that's called a rishon lutuma, and a rishon lutuma cannot be metame other the kelim. But nevertheless, the Rabbanon established that a rishon lutuma could be metame. Not only could a rishon lutuma be metame, but it could create what's called a sheni lutuma. So you have, let's say, a person touches a mess. He contracts tuma doraisa. That's called a rishon lutuma. On a doraisa level, he cannot be metame odom v'kelim. But if he comes in contact with another person, so midrabanan, that person becomes a sheni lutuma.
Right.
Okay, now what's the status of a sheni lutuma? The rabbanan established that a sheni lutuma is metame ochlin umashkim. So if a sheni lutuma comes in contact with ochlin umashkim, then he could create a shlishi lutuma. But here's where the rabbanan were very machmir in the case of mashkim. And they said that even though Tumah, as a general rule, goes down a Madrega, the exception is going to be Mashkim. Mashkim, again, this is all the Rabbanon, go up a Madrega. So instead of becoming a Shlishi Lutumah, the Mashkim become a Rishon Lutumah. And then Afkamin is the following, that a Sheni Lutumah could not be Mitame Chulin, it could only be Mitame Truma or Hegdesh. But once the Sheni Lutuma has contact with Mashkim, the Mashkim become a Rishon Lutuma, and Rishon Lutuma could be Mitame again Midrabanon, and make a Kli into a Sheni Lutuma. Okay, now, let's add another point over here. Yodayim, that's another Gzera which Rabbanon instituted, Yodayim has the Din of Shnios Lutuma. So Yodayim are always assumed, which is based on a principle, I guess, Yadayim Askadiyo, saying that the Yadayim is always called a Sheni Lutuma. Now, a Sheni Lutuma, Midrabanan, could be Metame Truma and make it into a Shlishi Lutuma and passel the Truma. But you have to be very careful because on a Doraisa level, a Sheni Lutuma could not create a Shlishi Lutuma in the case of Truma. So that itself is a Truma, that's already a Tuma Durabonon. It's very complicated because what do we do with Truma Tmeya? We burn Truma Tmeya. But the Torah allows and even obligates you to burn Truma Tmeya if that Truma is Tmeya Midoraisa. But here, if a Sheni Lutuma, like your Dayim is Shneels Lutuma, comes in contact with Truma, then this halacha that the truma is conveyed to the truma as a shlishi lutuma, that whole entity is all drabanan. So it's very strange because on a deraisa level it's truma and it's still tahora. So you're not allowed to burn that truma, even though midrabanan it became tmeya as a shlishi lutuma. So that's a problem. We'll try to come back to that a little bit later. But the point is that if you don't wash your hands, says Beit Shammai, then the hands are considered Shneos Lutuma. Now, what's the halach of Shneos Lutuma? So on the one hand, if they come in contact with Chulin, they do not convey or transfer Tuma. But if they come in contact with Truma, we said the Truma becomes Tmeya. However, the exception to this rule is Mashkim. The Rabbanim were much more Machmir in Mashkim because of the possibility of all sorts of Mashkim, like Dam, in the case of Nida. And you could talk about, in the case of a Zav, again, he has certain Mashkim that are Matami Midarai. So, in any event, the Rabbanim were more Machmir in Mashkim. And they established that when a Sheni Lutuma comes in contact with a Mashke, the Mashke becomes a Rishon Lutuma. And if the Mashke becomes a Rishon Lutuma, then it can be Tame a person, which means the following. According to Beit Shammai, there's no way that we can allow Yodayim, which are Shneos Lutum, if there's no Netilos Yodayim, to come in contact with the Kos, because on the outside of the Kos, they're a Mashkin. Because Beit Shammai is assuming that there's some overflow of the Mashkin from within, and it spills over to the outside of the Kli. So that when the person grabs onto the Kos, his yadayim, which are shnios l'tumah, will metami the mashkim on the outside of the kos, which makes the mashkin into a rishon l'tumah. That rishon l'tumah is metami kelim. Again, even though, as we said before, on a d'oraisa level, a kli can only contract tumah from an ava tumah, but min rabbanon, a kli can receive or can be contaminated by a rishon l'tuma, not a sheni l'tuma, because a sheni l'tuma could only be mitame, as we said, ochlin u'mashkin. So it can't be mitame kalim. But as far as a rishon l'tuma is concerned, a rishon l'tuma is mitame kalim. So what's going to happen now is that if his yodayim are not netulos, they haven't been washed, they have the status of shnios l'tuma. When they come in contact with the liquid that's on the outside of the kli, they now transfer tuma to the mashke on the outside of the kli and make it into a rishon l'tuma. Now the rishon l'tuma is going to be metavi the kos. And Beit Shammai hold that you're not allowed to eat a suda from a kos that's tmeya, even though we have to emphasize that the tumah here on the kos is only on the outside of the kos. Now you might ask me, how can you have a kos that's tmeh on the outside and not on the inside? So that's something unique to a tumah derabbanon, right? The tumah that this mashke is receiving, which was conveyed by yadayim, is only a tumah derabbanon. So rabbanon had to be very careful. They didn't want to establish that tumah as a tumah that's identical to a tumah d'oraisa, because it might lead to a mistake in which you might burn truma that midoraisa is tahora. So they made a new category, a category of tumah on the outside. So in any event, the bottom line is the kos has now contracted tumah, and that tumah was contracted by the liquid, the mashka, on the outside of the kos. And that mashka on the outside of the kos contracted tumah by virtue of the adayim, which are shnios l'tumah. The mashka became a rishon l'tumah, and now it's going to be metami the kos, albeit on the outside of the kos. And Beit Shammai cannot tolerate that we eat this meal with a kos that's tmeya. So how do we avoid this? Through netilas yadayim. When he washes his hands before he grabs onto the kos, then what happens is his hands are now tahoros, so they don't convey tumah to the mashkim that are on the outside of the kos, and therefore the kos remains a kos tahora. So we started with a kos tahora. It has, albeit mashkim, on the outside of the kos because the mashkim spills out from the inside of the kos to the outside, but is yadayim are now netulos, and if yadayim are netulos, they are tahoros, and they will not convey tumah. They will not convey tumah to the mashkim on the outside of the kos, which means that the mashkim will now remain tahora, and the kos remains tahora. That's what I understood so far. So the Gemara asks the following kasha. Vilatamu yadayim lakos. Why does the Braisa assume that the reason why the kos became a kos tmeya is, says Beit Shammai, because there's liquid from the inside of the kos that spilled over to the outside? Forget about that. Why don't we assume that the yadayim themselves, since he didn't do netila, again, we're trying to understand why, according to Beit Shammai, we need netila, because if you don't have netila, yadayim are shnios l'tumah, the shnios l'tumah should convey tumah to the kli, regardless of whether the kli is wet or dry. Even if the tumah, even if the kos is dry, since his hand is tame, it's a shnia l'tumah, and he comes directly in contact with the kos, that itself should warrant netila, because now the kos is going to receive tumah. So Gemara answers, no. Yadayim shnios hein, v'ein sheni osa shlishi bechulin. that a sheni could not create a shlishi lituma unless it's truma or hegdesh. So a sheni could not convey tuma to anything that's solid, which means it's chulin. This cost is chulin. And the only thing a sheni could do is one of two things. Either the sheni could create a shlishi lituma if that is truma, and then the truma becomes truma tmeya midrabanon, or alternatively, a sheni could convey tuma to a mashke, el al yedei mashke, and the mashke now becomes a rishon lituma, which means that the mashke could make a kli into a sheni lituma. So a sheni lituma could not create a kli as a shlishi lituma. A sheni lituma could only be metame truma, or alternatively, a sheni lituma could be metame mashkil. Beit Shammai assume that the outside of the kos has mashkim on it, because the liquid on the inside spills out to the outside of the kli, and now his yadayim, if they are shnios, will be metame the mashkim on the outside of the kos. And the mashkim are now on the outside of the kos, contract tuma, and that tuma is now passed on to the kos. Why? Because the mashkim themselves get a din of a rishon lutuma. Because as we said before, the rabbanu were more machmir in the case of mashkim. So that's the best I can do so far. Let's go on to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel omrim mozgin es hakos v'achakach notlim yadayin liyadayin. So Beis Hillel will not allow you to first wash your hands and then pour the kos. You have to wash your hands after you pour the kos. Why? So now Beis Hillel will address Beit Shammai's recommendation. And if ata omer, if you're going to say like Beit Shammai, that notlim liyadayim tchila, that first he should wash his hands, gzera, we're worried about the following. Shebi yitamu mashkim shebi yadayim machmas hakos v'yachzeru v'yitamu es hayadayim, that the mashkim of the yadayim will become tmeos. Now, normally, you know, if you would ask me, I would have said, well, if he washes his hands, then the yadayim are tahoros. The only problem is, says Beis Hillel, that there are still mashkim on his yadayim. Meaning Beis Hillel is not going to accept any sort of premise that he dried his hands. He didn't dry his hands. Or he did dry his hands, but not completely. So his hands are still wet. Yeah. If his hands are still wet, then what happens is that the kos that he picks up, which is a kos tmeya, okay, and here's where Beis Hillel disagree with Beit Shammai, because Beit Shammai doesn't have a kos tmeya on the table, but Beis Hillel allowed for a kos tmeya on the table, and we have to understand why. But this kos tmeya now will convey tuma to the water that's left on his hands. You know, we'll call it shirayim of water that's on his hands after the netila. And then the water themselves on his hands become a rishon lutuma. And why is that? Because the kos itself is tmeya. The kos has the status of a sheni lutuma. The sheni lutuma, when it comes in contact with a mashke, makes the mashke into a rishon lutuma. And the rishon lutuma now is metame's yodayin. So here, he was trying to be metayer es yodayim, but that's not going to happen. He's not going to achieve his goal. What are we afraid of? We're afraid that there's still liquids on his hand, even after the netilah. Those liquids, when they come in contact with the kos, and again, the premise is that the kos is a kos tmeya, that kos tmeya is now going to convey tumah to the liquid, the wetness on the outside of his hands, because he didn't dry his hands properly. And now the liquids on the outside of his hand become a rishon l'tuma. And then, as a result, the rishon l'tuma now conveys tuma onto his hands, and his hands become a sheni l'tuma. And the whole purpose of this exercise is to guarantee that he won't come to the meal with yadayim that are shnius l'tuma. I mean, to appreciate that, we have to go back to the laws of Truma, that back in the day, when the Kohanim were Tahorim, today we're all Tmeim, but those days they were Tahorim, we wanted to make sure that they wouldn't be Metame Truma. And once the Rabbanan instituted this Tuma of Yadayim, and made it into a Shnius L'Tuma, we said a Sheni makes a Shlishi, if that Shlishi is Truma. So in order to avoid that, the Chachamim required Netila. So the netila is going to remove the status of yadayim shnius l'tuma, and then you're okay, you're good to go. But if you're going to do this washing before you pour the kus, then what's going to happen is the kus itself, insofar as it's a kus tmeya, is going to convey tuma when you grab the kus to your hands that aren't totally dry. And the wetness on the outside of your hand will become a rishon l'tuma, because as we said before, a sheni l'tuma creates in mashkim a rishon l'tuma, and now the wetness on the outside of your hand has the status of a rishon l'tuma, and that will convey tuma to your yadayim. So you're back to square one. You started with yadayim that was shnius l'tuma. And you were a big shot, you wanted to be mitire those yadayim by doing netila. Well, at the end of the day, if you grab onto the kus, since the kus is a kus tmeya, now the tuma is going to be conveyed from the kus to the water that's on your hands, because you haven't washed your hand, dried your hands properly. And as a result, the mayim on your hands will convey tuma to your hands, and your hands become a shnius l'tuma. So you didn't accomplish anything over here. You wanted to make your yadayim tahoros, netulos, and remove the status of sheni l'tuma from your yadayim. You're not able to do that. And why is that? Because the wetness on your hands... See, again, Beis Hillel could have solved the problem if he would guarantee one of two things. Either he would guarantee that the hands are dry. If the hands are dry, then they remain tahoros. But that he can't do, because he holds that the gzera is that they're still not totally dry. He didn't completely dry his hands. He could have accomplished his goal if he would have assumed that the kus itself is tahora. But that he can't do, because he holds that the kus is a kus tome. So when you combine these two, and you have a kos tome with yadayim rituvos, yadayim that are wet, then the yadayim will not have the status of tahoros, because the mayim, as we said, on the outside of his yadayim, in contact with the kos tmeya, became a rishon l'tuma, and therefore they convey tuma to his yadayim, and he's back with yadayim tmeos. So Gemara asks a kasha on Beis Hillel. V'netame kos layadayim. Why is it that Beis Hillel is worried about the fact that he did not perfectly dry his hands? Forget about not drying his hands. Let's say he would dry his hands, but the kli itself, the kos, according to Beis Hillel, is a kos tmeya. So even if he dried his hands, once he has contact with the kus, then the kus itself should convey tumah to his yadayim. So why does Beis Hillel do somersaults in the air? And he says that, wait a minute, if he washes his hands, he's going to create a problem because the hands are wet. And he grabs onto the kus, and that conveys tumah to his yadayim through the wetness on his hand. Cut that all out. Forget about the wetness on his hand. Let's just worry about the contact between his hands and the kus tmeah. And the answer is, ein kli mitame adam, that a kli itself, which is a sheni l'tumah, could not be mitame a person. Only an avatumah could be mitame a person, or mirabbanan a rishon could be mitame a person, but a sheni could not be mitame a person. So the kos itself has the status of a sheni l'tumah, and it cannot be metame the yodayim of a person. But if we introduce a liquid, a mashke, that's going to be the problem, because the mashke could be mekamel tumah from a kli. Because a kli, that's a kli sheni, a sheni l'tumah, is metame mashkim to make it into a rishon, and hence it's going to be metame as yodayim. So the Gemara now asks another question. Vinetame La Mashkim Shebisocho. According to Beis Hillel, who allow you to use a kos that's a shady lituba, what good is it, according to Beis Hillel, if he's Metavita Shalola Tamiyasiyadayim, right? Lechora, what's going to happen here is that, that why don't we assume, according to Beis Hillel, that the mashkim that's inside the kli, they become tame. Right? According to Beis Hillel, what's Beis Hillel trying, what's the goal of Beis Hillel? The goal of Beis Hillel is to end up with a kus that, although the kus became tameh, but the contents of the kus on the inside have not become tameh. So let me read to you this footnote over here, just one second. He says the following. The kus, insofar as it's a sheni l'tumah, can transmit tumah to a mashke and make it into a rishon l'tumah. And that was Beis Hillel's problem, that if his hands are still wet, then when the mashke come in contact with the kus, and the kus is a kus tmei, it's a sheni l'tumah, the mashke becomes a rishon l'tumah, which is metamis yodayin. So the Gemara now asks the following question. Forget about that whole discussion about the hands being wet. Even if I grant you that his hands are dry, it should make no difference whatsoever. The kus itself is a kus tome. And in tuma, we say that the tuma travels from the outside into the inside. And certainly, Beis Hillel is not going to allow you to bring mashkim, that a tmeim, onto your table. I mean, he's allowing for a kus tome to be on your table for the suda, but not that the contents of the kus, the liquids inside the kus, if they are tmeim, if that's tamei, then you cannot bring that out to the table. So let me just read to you the note here. He says the following. One who eats food that's tamei himself becomes a sheni l'tuma, mirabbanan, and therefore, if Beis Hillel is going to allow you to bring out a kos tameh and eat from a kos tameh, right, because when he pours the wine, he's pouring the wine into a kos tameh, so then, if the kos is a sheni l'tumah, then whatever inside the kos, let's say there are liquids inside the kos, he's got wine inside the cup, that becomes a rishon l'tumah. And that which is a rishon l'tumah, you can't bring to your table. So if Basil are concerned about the status, I'm sorry, Basil are concerned about the status of a person's hands, then certainly Basil have to agree that he's got to protect the status of the liquids that are being brought onto the table. You know what I'm saying? Yadayim have to be Tahoros, and that Basil agrees, so you're quite entitled to Yadayim for the Suda, and you can't bring out something that's Tomei onto the Suda. Now, if the outside of the Kli became Tomei, because again, Basil is saying he hasn't washed his hands, because he can't wash his hands because the liquid will come in contact with the Kos, etc., so then is Yadayim Atmeos, the Shneels L'tumah, when they come in contact with the Kos, so what he's bringing, forget about the contact, let's leave that out, but the Kos itself is a Sheni L'tumah. If the Kos is a Sheni L'tumah, then the liquids inside the Kos, ipso facto, become a Rishon L'tumah. So the Gemara now creates this new entity. And what is this new entity? Something that defies all the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. You can have a Kli that's Tomei on the outside, but the Tumah remains on the outside of the Kli, and it doesn't penetrate inside the Kli to be Metami the Mashkin inside the Kli. How does that work?
Yeah, how is that?
So the Gemara is going to base itself on a Mishnah in Kalim. Hacha, says the Gemara, Bekli, Shednitmu Achorov, B'mashkin Askinon. The Kos became Tomei as a result of something that came onto the outside of the Kli. Let's say, for example, there were liquids that came in contact with the outside of the Kli. And what's the final status of the Kos? It's Tocho Tohar V'gabo Tomei. It's Tomei on the outside of the Kli, but not on the inside of the Kli. The Tumah does not penetrate to the inside of the Kli. How could that be? That defies all the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. So it's based on a Mishnah, and then we'll explain the logic of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Kelim, Kli, Shenitmu Achorav B'mashkin, Achorav Tmeim, but Tocho, it will go through Tocho, the Mishnah goes through different parts of Tocho, everything is Tar. So what is the Mishnah telling me? The Mishnah is telling me that if Mashkim Tmeim came in contact with the Kli, on the outside of the outside of the Kli becomes Tomei, but the inside of the Kli remains Tar. And here we turn to Daf Nun Beis Amid Beis. And what does it mean to say that the outside of the Kli is Tomei? So he says the following. That means the outside of the Kli to the exclusion of Tocho. Tocho means the inside of the Kli. Then the Kli has what's called Ogno, it's Ogen. So the Ogen is what we call the lip of the Kli, or the rim of the Kli, if you want to call it that. Then it has Ozno, which is the ear of the Kli, that means the handle of the Kli, which is shaped like an ear. Or, for example, another kind of handle is called Yadov. Yadov means like in a frying pan, where you have a straight handle, so you have the round handle that looks like the shape of an ear, and you have the straight out handle that looks like the handle of a frying pan. All that remains tar. The only thing that became tomei through the mashkim that were rishon l'tumah, that was metami the keli, that's only the kli on the outside itself. Everything else is tar. However, the Mishnah goes on to say, this part of the Mishnah is not relevant to us, but nitma toho, if let's say there were liquids that were a sheni lutum and they were poured into the kli, is nitma kulo. Then the kli is tame inside and outside. But our case is going to be a case, and again, the language of the Gemara, the last line on Amud Aleph was Hachavai Yaskinon Bikli Shenitma Chorav. So we're talking about a case where the kli became tamei by virtue of mashkim that were a rishon l'tumah that fell on the outside of the kli, and in such a case, the kli on the outside becomes tamei, but nothing on the inside becomes tamei. Now, how could that be? Again, we have the mission in Kelim, but again, we explained the logic before. On a Doraisa level, a Sheni Lutuma could not convey Tuma. The whole institution here is Mirabana. And the Rabana wanted to make a distinction between their Tuma and Tuma Doraisa. So in Tuma Doraisa, let's say, for example, if you had an Ava Tuma that was metame the outside of a kli, then the inside of the kli would likewise be tame. And then if you had truma inside the kli, you would have to burn that truma. But here we're talking about a case where the kli became tame through a sheni lituma, mashkim that were sheni lituma. That ability for a keli to be mekabel tuma from something other than an avat tuma is all drabbana. Because the only way you could be metame a kli on a doraisa level is by contact with an avat tuma, not through mashkim that have a sheni lituma status, and they're going to be metame the kli through the halacha of a rishon lituma, because again the mashkim will be upgraded min rabbanan to the status of a rishon lituma. But a rishon lituma on a doraisa level could not be metame a keli. So in order to make it clear that we're dealing a heker, that we're dealing with the Tumah Derabbanan, the Rabbanan said we're going to invent a whole new category of Tumah in which the outside of the Kli is Tameh and the inside of the Kli remains Tah. So B'maikam Miflagi, the Gemara now wants to summarize everything that we've been doing until now and formulate the Machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. So the Gemara says the following. Beit Shammai Savri also lishtamish bekli shenitmu achorav b'mashkim. So now we have the following scenario. We've got mashkim that are tmeim, we'll call it a rishon lutuma, and they were metame the outside of a kli. Says Beis Hillel, we cannot use that kli. Why can't we use the kli? What is Beis Hillel concerned about? And the answer is, because according to Beis Hillel, I'm sorry, I said Beis Hillel and I meant Beit Shammai. So cross it out if I said Beis Hillel. Again, we're analyzing Beit Shammai.
Right.
According to Beit Shammai, why is it that we can't use this kli that contracted tumor on the outside of the kli through its contact with mashkin that were a rishon l'tumah? The answer is because Beis Shammai are worried that the kli is not dry. The kli is wet. And that's called in the Lashon HaGemara gzeira mishum nitzotzos. So the nitzotzos are the spilling from the inside of the kli. The kli pours over its mashkin onto the outside of the kli. And now you've got mashkim on the outside of the kli that have the status of a rishon lutuma. Why? Because the kli itself contracted tuma from a rishon lutuma, from mashkim, and now the kli becomes a conduit to convey tuma to the droplets of liquid that are on the outside of the kli. So Beit Shammai are assuming that the kli is not dry. The kli is wet. Now, why is the kli wet? The kli is wet because when I pour liquids into the kli, we have to assume, I don't want to use the word inevitably, but let's call it a very high probability that the halacha has to be concerned with, that the liquids inside the kli spilled over to the outside of the kli. And if that happens, then you've got a problem. Why? Because the liquids on the outside of the kli will now convey tumah to his yodayim. So therefore, according to Beit Shammai, we've got a problem here if the kli itself is tameh. If the kli is tameh, even though technically it was only tameh because of contact with liquids from the outside, but nevertheless, the liquids on the inside of the kli, because chayshinon linitzotzos, we're worried about those liquids from the inside of the kli pouring out to the outside of the kli, if he hasn't washed his hands, then those liquids will become tameh. And what does he have to do now? He has to guarantee that this kos is not a kos tameh. Because if the kos is a kos tameh, according to Beit Shammai, he's got a real problem. Why? Because the kos tameh, although it's only tameh on the outside, it's going to be metameh the mashkim that's overflow from the inside. So let's just take a look at footnote number 7 for a second. Therefore, according to Beit Shammai, it's imperative that he wash netilas yadayim before pouring the cup, because otherwise, if his hands are not washed and they have a din of a sheni l'tumah, they would transfer tumah over to the mashkim that are outside of the cup if the cup is a cup that's tameh. But now we have a case where the cup is tar, and if the cup is tar, then since the contents of the cup is tar, the cup itself is tar, now what are you afraid of? You're afraid of contact between his yadayim and what? And the kos. But everything is tar. The only problem is that his yadayim are shnios l'tumah. So he'll solve that problem by washing his hands. Yeah, but now when he washes his hands, he removes the status of Sheni Lutuma from his hands, but he has a problem, because Basil argue that his hands are still wet. So Beit Shammai would say, no, I don't have to assume his hands are wet and they will contract Tuma from the kos. And even if I grant you that the hands are still wet, but the kos itself is a kos tar. So that's according to Beit Shammai, Velekel Amigzar Shemi Yitamu Hamashkim Shevi Yadayim Bakos, that maybe we should worry about the fact that the Yitamu Hamashkim Shevi Yadayim Bakos. Just 1 second. He says, Ein Ligzar Sakzera Shagazru Beis Hillel Shelo Yitol Yodov Kodem Miziga Mechasha Shebi Yitamu Amashkim Shebi Yadayim Bakos. And the answer is, even if I grant you in the worst case scenario that there's still wetness on his hands, says Beit Shammai, and Basil says, therefore you gotta postpone your washing your hands. Nein, according to Beit Shammai, I have no problem even if there's wetness on his hands, because the kos itself is a kos tahora. So it's really interesting that Beit Shammai, in a sense, solve both problems with one fell swoop. What do I mean? That on the one end, you would argue that since there's liquid. So let's try to summarize Beit Shammai's shita. Beit Shammai requires netila before you pour the kos. Why? Because According to Beit Shammai, if you don't wash your hands, then we have to worry about nitzotzos, that if there's nitzotzos on the outside of the kli, and your hands are shnios l'tuma, because you didn't wash your hands, then the shnios l'tuma will convey tuma onto these mashkim. The mashkim now become a rishon l'tuma, and they will now be metami yoyodayim. That's going to be the story if you didn't wash your hands. Right? Now, let's say you went ahead and you washed your hands. So Beis Hillel are going to say to Beit Shammai, wait a minute, you washed your hands, and now you're picking up a kus, and the kus is a kus tmeya. Well, if you're going to pick up your kus with a kus tmeya and your hands are still wet, you got a serious problem, because the tumor of the kus is going to be transferred to the wetness on your hands, and you're going to have again your daim tmeil. So the answer to that, says Beit Shammai, is that you're going to guarantee that this kus is a kus tahora. It's not a kus tmeil. Now again, if it's a kus tahora, then what's your problem? Your problem is your daim shneos. Right, and you don't go to a sudo with your daim that are shneos, right? Because you might touch truma, and a sheni could be metame truma. Okay, he's going to wash his hands. If he's going to wash his hands, then mimarafshach, he's covered, right? What are you going to tell me that there are mashkim that are on the outside of the kus because these nitzotzos? What difference does it make? The kus itself is a kus tahora. So according to Beit Shammai, when you wash your hands before you pick up the kus, you've guaranteed that there's no tumah over here. You've removed the status of shneos l'tumah from your hands, your daim shneos, because your daim on the tulos. And what are you going to tell me that you have a problem of nitzotzos on the outside of the kli? Well, guess what? The kli itself is a kli tar, because you've guaranteed that the kli is a kli tar, because Beit Shammai is not going to allow to use a kli tamei. And now let's go one step further. Why is it that Beit Shammai will not allow you to use a kli tamei? And the answer is very simple. Because I couldn't care less what the status of your yadayim are, even if your yadayim are tahoros, it wouldn't make any difference, because since the kos is a kos tmeya, and we have to worry about nitzotzos according to Beit Shammai, so this liquid that overflows onto the outside of the kli, if the kli itself is tame, then those liquids become a rishon l'tuma, and they're going to be metame your yadayim, and make them into shneos l'tuma. So everything really, according to Beit Shammai, fits into one hole. Now let's go on to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel Savri, Mutal Ishtamish Beklisha Nitmu Achora Vimashkin. So why is it that Beis Hillel will allow you to use a kli, the outside of the kli became tame through mashkim, which means that the mashkim had a din of a rishon l'tuma, and rishon l'tuma can be tame the keli, and the keli itself now is tame? But the answer is, only the outside of the kli is tame. The inside of the kli is still tar, so you can use that kli. Ella what? You're afraid that the outside of the kli might have the pourings, right, the drippings from the inside to the outside of the kli, and they become a rishon l'tuma, to be metame yo yadayim, name. According to Beis Hillel, Amri nitzotzos lo shchichi. They hold that this concern about the possibility, the statistical probability, if you will, of the mashkim going from inside the kli to the outside of the kli is very low probability. And therefore, we're assuming that the kli itself is dry. If the kli is dry and it's only tummy on the outside, we're allowed to bring it out to the suda. And therefore, even if his yadayim would be shneos l'tumah, right? He's not ready for the Suda yet, so you're not allowed to have Yadayim Shneels L'tumah for your Suda, but he's not up to his Suda. He's just pouring a kus of Yayin. And the kus itself might very well be Tmeah on the outside, but it's not Tmeah on the inside, so he's not bringing Mashkim Tmeahim to his table. His Yadayim are Yadayim Shneels. Well, what difference does it make? Even if it's Yadayim or Yadayim Shneos, they cannot confer or, how should I say, convey Tumah to the Kos, because a Sheni cannot create a Shlishi in a Kos, unless it's Truma. But Ain Sheni Mitame, as we said before, Chulin. So the Kos is Chulin. You cannot be Mitame the Kos. And not only that, even if you would be mitami the kos, but since your hands are dry, what do I care if you're mitami the kos? It's irrelevant. The only problem would be if you had nitzotzos. If you had nitzotzos that were coming onto the outside of your kli from the inside of the kli, those nitzotzos would now become a rishon l'tumah, and that would be a problem because we don't want to have this rishon l'tumah. But Beis Hillel holds then nitzotzos lo shchichi. So there's no problem in using a kli tamei if nitzotzos alo shchichi. So all you're going to need is at the time that you're ready for the suda, you're going to have to wash your hands to remove the status of sheni l'tumah from your hands. Then the Gemara adds another point to Beis Hillel. The ikal nechesh shemi yitamu mashkin shemi yadayim machmas akos. Oh, now, since the outside of the kos, according to Beis Hillel, is tamei, then if he washes his hands before he pours the kos, he's going to have a residue of mayim, not the nitzotzos coming from the inside of the kos, but the mayim on his hands, because we're afraid that he didn't dry his hands properly, so he's got liquids on his hand. And now those liquids come in contact with the kos. The kos itself is a kos tmeya, and therefore the liquids become a rishon l'tumah, and they convey tumah to his yodayim. So we have a real serious problem here if he's going to wash his hands before he pours the kos. And now, the Gemara, so again, just to get the overview of Beis Hillel, Beis Hillel has no problem if the kos is tamei. And the reason for that is Basil say that if the kos is tamei, that's only on the outside, because Hochmai Askin in our case is where the tumah of the mashkin that were a rishon tumah came in contact with this kli on the outside of the kli. So only the outside of the kli is tamei. He's got no problem bringing out this kli because there's nothing on the inside that's tamei. So he has no mashkin or ochlim tmeim on his shulchan. That's fine. However, Basil has a problem if he washes his hands, because if he washes his hands and there's wetness on his hands, that wetness now will contract tumah from the kos if he washes his hands, because the kos is a kos tmeah according to Basil. And now the tumah is conveyed to the mashkim that are the wetness on his hands, they become a rishon l'tumah. And that's Basil's problem. So therefore, you cannot wash your hands before the suda. I'm sorry, before the pouring of the wine into the kos, because you'll be left with wetness that's going to contract tumor from the kos. Your hands therefore are dry, and you're pouring the kos. There's no liquids, neither on your hands because your hands are dry, nor on the outside of the kos, because Basil's not choshesh for nitzotzos, and everything is fine. And now he's ready to start his suda. He's ready to make hamotzi lechem in aretz. At this point, he's going to remove the status of Yadayim Shneos by washing his hands. So the Gemara asks the following kasha. Oh, no, I'm sorry. So everything fits into place. But now the Gemara offers a Dover Acher. And a Dover Acher seems to be a whole new explanation as to why Beis Hillel want to postpone the Netila until after the kos, and he drank the kos, and now he's ready for Hamotzi. And that's called Tekef L'Netilas Yadayim Se'uda. That the hands have to be washed right before the meal. That's called Tekef. So you want to get the Netila connected to the beginning of the Suda. And how do you guarantee that? By postponing your Netila until after you drank the kos, and now you're ready to start your suda. So Gemara immediately asks, "My dover acher? Why does Beis Hillel feel compelled to add a dover acher, like another logical point?" Hachi kamri lu Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. Beis Hillel is saying to Beit Shammai, "Lidid chu diamrisu. Even if I accept your premise that also lishtamish bekli shachorav tmeim, I'm not allowed to use a kli that became contracted to through a liquid on the outside of the kli, and the reason is because Gzeir Mishum Nitzotz were afraid that there's liquid from inside the kli on the outside. And now you have a choice. You can tell me to wash Netilas Yadayim before I pour the kos, and in that case I guarantee that even if in the worst scenario there are Nitzotzos, but my hands have become Tahoros because of this Netila. So you gain the Netila. What does Beit Shammai gain by having the Netila before the pouring of the Kos, before the Mezigas HaKos? He gains, he covers his bases as far as the Chashash of Nitzotzos are concerned. Why? Because his hands now become Tahoros, but yet he forfeits on the other side the mitzvah or the regulation of tekef l'netilas yodayim se'uda. So therefore, filu hachi ha'adifa. Beis Hillel argue that you should agree to me that if you have to make a trade-off here, tekef l'netilas yodayim se'uda should trump the halach of chayshinon l'netzotzos. So chayshinon l'netzotzos is only a chashash, is a gzerah. And for the sake of that gzera, you're going to forfeit and violate the din of tekef l'netilas yadayim suda. That doesn't make any sense. That's not the right decision making process. So just to summarize the last point of the Dover Acher, Beis Hillel basically saying to Beit Shammai that you have two concerns or two considerations that you have to put on the table and consider them in halacha. One is that there might be nitzotzos outside the cup, and those nitzotzos will contract tumah from his hands and transmit it to the cup. The other is that we have a concern that it's got to be tekef l'netila se'uda. So that's the Dover Acher, tekef l'netila yadayim se'uda. Now we go on to the next machlokas between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. And we'll see if we can, just one sec, let's just see if we should, I think what we'll do is we'll take a break now, because the next part of the sugya itself, we'll need a little bit more time here on Daf Nun Beis Amid Beis. So let's just see where we're up to. We're on Daf Nun Beis Amid Beis, and we're up to the two dots, which is approximately 13 some odd lines down from the top of the Amid.